This is Ms. G. I bring you Telling Tales, and I have a nice short story tonight. It's called The Night We All Had Gripe by Shirley Jackson. I'll give you a chance to get settled, and I'll be right back. Please stay tuned here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau, Alaska. And hello, I'm back. This is Ms. G. I'm bringing you Telling Tales here tonight. And my story tonight is by Shirley Jackson, The Night We All Had Gripe. We are all of us in our family very fond of puzzles. I do double cross sticks and read mystery stories. My husband does baseball box scores and figures out batting averages. Our son, Lori, is addicted to the kind of puzzle which begins, "There are 54 items in this picture, beginning with the letter C." Our older daughter, Janie, does children's jigsaws. And Sally, the baby, can put together an intricate little arrangement of rings and bars, which has had the rest of us stopped for 2 months. We are none of us, however, capable of solving the puzzles we work up for ourselves in the oddly diffuse patterns of our several lives. Who is, now I think of it? And along with such family brain teasers as, why is there a pair of roller skates in Mommy's desk? And what is really in the back of Lori's closet? And why doesn't Daddy wear the nice shirts Janie picked out for Father's Day? We are all of us still wondering nervously about what might be called the great gripe mystery. As a matter of fact, I should be extremely grateful if anyone could solve it for us, because we are certainly very short of blankets, and it's annoying not to have any kind of answer. Here in rough outline is our puzzle. Our house is large, and the second floor has 4 bedrooms and a bathroom, all opening out onto a long, narrow hall, which we have made even narrower by lining it with bookcases, so that every inch of hall, which is not a doorway, is books. As is the case with most houses, both the front door and the back door are downstairs on the first floor. The front bedroom, which is my husband's and mine, is the largest and lightest and has a double bed. The room next down the hall has a double-decker hall, belongs to the girls, and contains a crib and a single short bed. Lori's room across the hall has a double-decker bed, and he sleeps on the top half. The guest room at the end of the hall has a double bed. The double bed in our room is made up with white sheets and cases. The baby's crib has pink linen, and Janie's bed has yellow. Lori's bed has green linen, and the guest room has blue. The bottom half of Lori's bed is never made up, unless company is going to use it immediately, because the dog, whose name is Toby, traditionally spends a large part of his time there and regards it as his bed. There is no bed table on the distaff side of the double bed in our room. One side of the bed in the guest room is pushed against the wall. No one can fit into the baby's crib except the baby. The ladder to the top half of Lori's double-decker is very shaky and stands in a corner of the room. The children reach the top half of the bed by climbing up over the footboard. All three of the children are accustomed to having a glass of apple juice, to which they are addicted, by their bedsides at night. My husband invariably keeps a glass of water by his bedside. Lori uses a green glass. Janie uses a red glass. The baby uses one of those little flowered cheese glasses. And my husband uses a tin glass because he has broken so many ordinary glasses trying to find them in the dark. I do not take cough drops or cough medicine in any form. The baby customarily sleeps with half a dozen cloth books, an armless doll, and a small cardboard suitcase which holds the remnants of half a dozen decks of cards. Janie is very partial to a pink baby blanket which has shrunk for many types of washing. The girl's room is very warm, the guest room moderately so, our room is chilly, and Lori's room is quite cold. We are all of us, including the dog, notoriously easy and heavy sleepers. My husband never eats coffee cake. My husband caught the gripe first on a Friday and snarled and shivered and complained until I prevailed upon him to go to bed. By Friday night, both Lori and the baby were feverish, and on Saturday, Janie and I began to cough and sniffle. In our family, we take ill in different manners. My husband is extremely annoyed at the whole procedure and is convinced that his being sick is somebody else's fault. Lori tends to become a little lightheaded and strew handkerchiefs across around his room. Janie coughs and coughs and coughs. The baby turns bright red, and I suffer in stoical silence so long as everyone knows clearly that I am sick. We are each of us privately convinced that our own ailment is far more severe than anyone else's. At any rate, on Saturday night, I put all the children into their beds, gave each of them half an aspirin and the usual fruit juice, covered them warmly, and then settled my husband down for the night with his glass of water and his cigarettes and matches and ashtray. He had decided to sleep in the guest room because it was warmer. At about 10 o'clock, I checked to see that all the children were covered and asleep and that Toby was in his place on the bottom half of the double-decker. I then took two sleeping pills and went to sleep in my own bed in my own room. Because my husband was in the guest room, I slept on his side of the bed next to the bed table. I put my cigarettes and matches on the end table next to the ashtray, along with a small glass of brandy, which I find more efficacious than cough medicine. I woke up sometime later to find Janie standing next beside the bed. "Can't sleep," she said. "Want to come in your bed?" "Come along," I said. "Bring your own pillow." She went and got her pillow and her small pink blanket and her glass of fruit juice, which she put on the floor next to the bed since she had gotten the side without any end table. She put her pillow down, rolled herself in her pink blanket, and fell asleep. I went back to sleep, but sometime later the baby came in, asking sleepily, "Where's Janie?" "She's here," I said. "Are you coming in bed with us?" "Yes," said the baby. "Go and get your pillow then," I said. She returned with her pillow, her books, her doll, her suitcase, and her fruit juice, which she put on the floor next to Janie's. Then she crowded in comfortably next to Janie and fell asleep. Eventually, the pressure of the two of them began to force me uneasily toward the edge of the bed. So I rolled out wearily, took my pillow and my small glass of brandy and my cigarettes and matches and my ashtray and went into the guest room where my husband was asleep. I pushed at him and he snarled, but finally moved over to the side next to the wall. And I put my cigarettes and matches and my brandy and my ashtray on the end table next to his cigarettes and matches and ashtray and tin glass of water and put my pillow on the bed and fell asleep. Shortly after this, he woke me and asked me to let him get out of the bed since it was too hot in that room to sleep and he was going back to his own bed. He took his pillows and his cigarettes and matches and his ashtray and his tin glass of water and went paddling off down the hall. In a few minutes, Lori came into the guest room where I had just fallen asleep again. He was carrying his pillow and his glass of fruit juice. "Too cold in my room," he said, and I moved out of the way and let him get into the bed on the side next to the wall. After a few minutes, the dog came in, whining nervously, and came up onto the bed and curled himself up around Lori, and I had to get out or be smothered. I gathered together what of my possessions I could and made my way into my own room, where my husband was asleep with Janie on one side and the baby on the other. Janie woke up when I came in and said, "Own bed." So I helped her carry her pillow and her fruit juice and her pink blanket back to her own bed. The minute Janie got out of our bed, the baby rolled over and turned sideways, so there was no room for me. I could not get into the crib, and I could not climb into the top half of the double-decker, so since the dog was in the guest room, I went and took the blanket off the crib and got into the bottom half of the double-decker, setting my brandy and my cigarettes and my matches and my ashtray on the floor next to the bed. Shortly after that, Janie, who apparently felt left out, came in with her pillow and her pink blanket and her fruit juice and got up into the top half of the double-decker, leaving her fruit juice on the floor next to my brandy. At about 6 in the morning, the dog wanted to get out, or else he wanted his bed back, because he came and stood next to me and howled. I got up and went downstairs, sneezing, and let him out. And then decided that since it had been so cold anyway in the bottom half of the double-decker, I might as well stay downstairs and heat up some coffee and have that much warmth at least. While I was waiting for the coffee to heat, Janie came to the top of the stairs and asked if I would bring her something hot. And I heard Lori stirring in the guest room, so I heated some milk and put it in to a jug and decided that while I was at it, I might just as well give everybody something hot. So I set out enough cups for everyone and brought out a coffee cake and put it on the tray and added some onion rolls for my husband, who does not eat coffee cake. When I brought the tray upstairs, Lori and Janie were both in the guest room giggling, so I put the tray down in there and heard baby walking from our room in the front. I went to get her, and she was sitting up in the bed, talking to her father, who was only very slightly awake. "Play card?" she was asking brightly, and she opened her suitcase and dealt him onto the pillow next to his nose, 4 diamonds to the ace, jack, and the 7 of clubs. I asked my husband if he would like some coffee, and he said it was terribly cold. I suggested that he come down into the guest room where it was warmer. He and the baby followed me down to the guest room, and my husband and Lori got into the bed, and the rest of us sat on the foot of the bed, and I poured the coffee and the hot milk and gave the children coffee cake and my husband the onion rolls. Janie decided to take her milk and coffee cake back into her own bed, and since she had mislaid her pillow, she took one from the guest room bed. Baby, of course, followed her, going first back into our room to pick up her pillow. My husband fell asleep again while I was pouring his coffee, and Lori set his hot milk precariously on the headboard of the bed and asked me to get his pillow from wherever it was. So I went into the double-decker and got him the pillow from the top, which turned out to be Janie's, and her pink blanket was with it. I took my coffee cake and my coffee into my own bed and had just settled down when Lori came in to say cloudily that Daddy had kicked him out of the bed and could he stay in here. I said, of course, and he said he would get a pillow, and he came back in a minute with the one from the bottom half of the double-decker, which was mine. He went to sleep right away, and then the baby came in to get her books and her suitcase and decided to stay with her milk and her coffee cake. So I left and went into the guest room and made my husband move over and sat there and had my coffee. Meanwhile, Janie had moved into the top half of the double-decker looking for her pillow and had taken instead the pillow from baby's bed and my glass of brandy and had settled down there to listen to Lori's radio. I went downstairs to let the dog in, and he came upstairs and got into his bed on the bottom half of the double-decker, and while I was gone, my husband had moved back over onto the accessible side of the guest room bed, so I went into Janie's bed, which is rather too short, and I brought a pillow from the guest room and my coffee. At about 9 o'clock, the Sunday papers came, and I went down to get them, and at about 9:30, everyone woke up. My husband had moved back into his own bed when Lori and Baby vacated it for their own beds. Lori driving Janie into the guest room when he took back the top half of the double-decker, and my husband woke up at 9:30 and found himself wrapped in Janie's pink blanket, sleeping on Lori's green pillow, and with a piece of coffee cake and Baby's fruit juice glass, not to mention the four diamonds to the ace jack and the seven of clubs. Lori, in the top half of the double-decker, had my glass of brandy and my cigarettes and matches and the baby's pink pillow. The dog had my white pillow and my ashtray. Janie, in the guest room, had one white pillow and one blue pillow and two glasses of fruit juice and my husband's cigarettes and matches and ashtray and Lori's hot milk, besides her own hot milk and coffee cake and her father's onion rolls. The baby in her crib had her father's tin glass of water and her suitcase and books and doll and a blue pillow from the guest room, but no blanket. The puzzle is, of course, what became of the blanket from Baby's bed? I took it off her crib and put it on the bottom half of the double-decker, but the dog did not have it when he woke up, and neither did any of the other beds. It was a blue-patterned patchwork blanket and has not been seen since. And I would most particularly like to know where it got to. As I say, we are very short of blankets. I hope you enjoyed Shirley Jackson's The Night We All Had Gripe. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. I will be right back here at KTO 104.3 in Juneau. Stay tuned. And hello there. This is Ms. G, still bringing you Telling Tales here tonight at KTO 104.3. I hope you enjoyed that last story by Shirley Jackson. I have another short one for you. It's called Someone to Care For by Maria Gooden. My friend Natalie can't see the point in you. She says that all you do is burp, fart, dribble, grin inanely, and emit a series of unintelligible noises. Admittedly, she hasn't seen you at your best, but I still think that's a little harsh. The first time Natalie came to visit, you were asleep on your back, gurgling little spit bubbles, a thin strand of drool running down your chin, and Natalie just stared at you as if you were a creature from another planet. She made no secret of the fact that she wasn't impressed. The second time she came to visit, you crawled across the carpet towards her and vomited on her expensive new shoes. I tried to make light of it, explaining that it's mainly just liquid and wipes off easily, but she really did look quite appalled. Natalie likes being a career woman, rushing between meetings in her power suit, clutching her Starbucks coffee and her laptop. She's never wanted a husband or a baby, but if she could see you on a good day, I'm sure she'd feel differently. If she could see the way you clap your hands and squeal with excitement when Scooby-Doo comes on the telly, then she'd find you just as adorable as I do. Instead, she thinks you're smelly and have a strange-shaped head. She looked revolted when I said you like putting your toes in your mouth and finds it disturbing that you're always staring greedily at my breasts. It upsets her even more when you stare greedily at her breasts. I tried to explain that you're a man, and that's what men do, but she wasn't having any of it. If I'm honest, I think you could have made a bit more of an effort when Natalie first visited our house. I know it was the morning after Spongy Stag Do, but I thought you could have at least lugged yourself into the bedroom instead of lying sprawled on the sofa in a curly wig, a pair of women's shoes, and a t-shirt with a photo of Spongy's bare bottom on the front. If you'd had some trousers on, it might not have been so bad. Natalie and I were comfortable enough perched on the wooden chairs, but it was quite distracting to have you snoring over our conversation, and I think Natalie was a bit uncomfortable when you started mumbling and fiddling with yourself. When Natalie left, giving me a kiss on the cheek and a look of pity before rushing off for an appointment with her personal trainer, I removed your stilettos, covered you with a blanket, and wiped the drool from your chin. Later, when you woke up screaming about a pain in your head, which you assumed must be a brain hemorrhage, I gently explained that you had simply consumed an excessive amount of alcohol. I then sat by your side, holding your hand and stroking your forehead in a bid to reassure you. 3 days later, when you had recovered, I firmly reiterated this link between lager and suffering and said I hoped you had learned your lesson. You looked ashamed, said you wouldn't do it again, and then promptly went out and got wasted. I secretly hoped that things would be better the next time Natalie came to visit. I thought she might like you better if you had your trousers on and you were conscious. To be fair, you didn't let me down on either of those counts, but if I'm going to be picky, then I wish you'd been sober and hadn't vomited on her. I assumed that when I told you she was coming for dinner, you would come home from the pub before 10 o'clock. But of course you bumped into Spongy down at the Queen's Head, and the two of you decided to celebrate the fact that you were wearing the same socks. I understand how important these things are to you, and I do appreciate the fact that you phoned me from the pub 6 times with a string of terrible excuses. But could you not have come for the chicken chasseur I had prepared? Instead, you fell through the front door 3 hours late, addressed Natalie as Bob, crawled towards her on all fours, and then chucked up all over her feet. It wiped off just as I said it would, but I don't think that made Natalie like you any better. Once Natalie had left, which she did at great pace, I cleared up the mess and sat you down at the kitchen table. You clutched my fingers tightly and tried to put one of them in your mouth, mistaking it for the digestive biscuit I offered you. I should have been furious, but when you grinned stupidly at me, your mouth surrounded by biscuit crumbs, my heart softened and I forgave you. At the end of the day, however badly you behave, you're mine and I still love you. I can understand why Natalie thinks you're an idiot, but it's easy for her to judge. She already has everything she ever desired. I never wanted the impressive job title, the sports car, the big flashy house. All I ever really wanted was to be a mother. You might not be the most sophisticated man in the world, but you have a good heart and all the other necessary parts to help me fulfill that dream. I know exactly why having a baby is so important to me. I want someone I can take care of. I find it incredible that another flailing, helpless human being could rely on me to look after them. Babies are so utterly incapable of looking after themselves, so dependent on others for their well-being. From their failure to control their bodily functions to their inability to use their tiny, undeveloped brains, they are so completely useless without someone to care for them. I want to be needed like that. Natalie says, I don't need a baby to fulfill my dream. She says, I'm already there. I have no idea what she means. I just don't think these career women understand. That was Maria Goodens, Someone to Care For. And this is Telling Tales with Ms. G at KTO 104.3. And I will be right back. Please stay tuned. I apologize. We seem to have a little technical difficulty with some music. So instead, I've got a poem for you. I actually found this on the internet, and it's by Chaney Gorkin. It's called Worst Day Ever. Today was the absolute worst day ever, and don't try to convince me that there's something good in every day. Because when you take a closer look, this world is a pretty evil place. Even if some goodness does shine through once in a while, satisfaction and happiness don't last. And it's not true that it's all in the mind and heart, because true happiness can be attained only if one's surroundings are good. It's not true that good exists. I'm sure you can agree that. The reality creates my attitude. It's all beyond my control. And you'll never in a million years hear me say today was a very good day. Now, this is a very interesting, wonderful poem by an 11th grader named Chaney Gorkin. So if you listen to that poem, Worst Day Ever, and read it from the bottom to the top, you'll see it's a little bit different. Here we go. Today was a very good day, and you'll never in a million years hear me say it's all beyond my control. My attitude creates the reality. I'm sure you can agree that it's not true that good exists only if one's surroundings are good. True happiness can be attained because it's all in the mind and heart. And it's not true that satisfaction and happiness don't last. Some goodness does shine through once in a while. Even if this world is a pretty evil place. Because when you take a closer look, there's something good in every day. And don't try to convince me that today was the absolute worst day ever. That was by the ingenious Chaney Gorkin. This is Telling Tales with Ms. G. And I hope to bring you a little more music at the end of this. And with that being said, I'm almost out of here. So I hope you've enjoyed the show. And until next time, this has been Telling Tales with Ms. G.